Hello, I'm Sarah Swanton, and you're listening to the Happy Healthy Entrepreneur podcast, where I get in conversation with everyday small business owners just like you and me, and we discuss the inner journey of being self-employed. This week is a little bit different. Now, I'm part of a mastermind group, and we meet once a month, and after our meeting, we enjoy lunch together. And in this episode, you're going to be able to listen in on one of those lunchtime conversations where the theme is all around the stories we tell ourselves and how it holds us back or has held us back in business historically. Within that, it covers a range of juicy topics, all relevant to entrepreneurs, actually no matter what stage you're at, including perfectionism, comparison, money stuff, self-belief, and listening to your own intuition and wisdom when it comes to being in business. I always get so much from these chats, you know, just shooting the breeze, and I hope you do too by having a little listen in to this particular one. So happy listening, folks, and I hope you enjoy it. What I wanted to do is just have a bit of a chat. Just for us to have a bit of a chat and a bit of an exploration, really, around in our businesses, the stories that we tell ourselves. I'll give you an example, and I was reflecting on this morning as I was driving here. One of the stories I tell myself, and it's around tech, and I've often told myself the story of, oh, I'm not very good with tech, ooh, can't do it. And I've held back on investing in the kind of software that would be really helpful for my business. And yesterday I made the decision to invest in a software that will host my online course and will provide such a premium quality to it. I thought, I will just take it one step at a time, right? That's it. I'm just going to take it one step at a time. And sometimes it feels, I could feel it happening yesterday, like, oh no, I don't know what to do next. And then you just breathe, and then the next step becomes clear. And so that story about I'm not a technical person, it's not true.
Are you fascinated by tech, though? Does it interest you? But then there's a point where you go, oh, it does interest me, but actually I'm no good at it. Mm.
Yeah. Fascinates me because I will research for hours, like, which tech to get. Mm. And I know the tech I should be using. I've been using MailChimp since day dot, but I shouldn't be using MailChimp. And finally yesterday I decided I'm not going to use MailChimp anymore. And that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, you know what you should be doing, but why aren't you doing it?
Because the story takes you in the opposite direction, doesn't it? Yeah. You know, and the story becomes so compelling. Like, and that story could easily escalate for you of, like, well, I can't do the techie stuff. And now it's like, well, actually, I've realised I can do the techie stuff. Now I need to do all the techie stuff myself. Rather than thinking, well, I know how to do it, I've got the knowledge, but actually, is this the best use of my time? And maybe I'll fill the tech out to somebody else. But at least I know if they can't do it, I can bring it back. So it's like the story could easily evolve into that. Now I need to be superwoman, I've got the tech bit nailed.
Yeah, at the expense of all other time.
Yeah.
I remember making a conscious decision probably a couple of years ago now. I was writing my daily blog and I was creating a graphic and I was on Canva. We talked about Canva already in the meeting today. I was on Canva and I was spending an incredible amount of time looking for a specific image, a free image, not paying the $1 for a free image. And I suddenly realised that I could pay a dollar and make it really easy, because the image that I wanted was right at the top and I could find it easily and I could just do that. And I very, very, very suddenly realised that I could do that. So I bought the image and I spent £20 on Canva, and if I couldn't find, and I suddenly realised that my time was so valuable that it was so worth me spending a dollar on that image, rather than spending half an hour of my time, which is worth a lot more than a dollar, and making my life easy. It's a huge shift.
Do we spend so much time thinking, especially in the beginning of our businesses, do we spend too much time thinking about the price and the cost of something?
Yeah.
Rather than saying the cost of our time, it's literally the cost in dollars and pounds and how we actually get through the first few months of our business. I can't afford that. I need that, I need that, I need that, but I can't afford that, or I can afford this. So it's kind of the Peter and Paul situation where you're constantly moving money from here, there and everywhere just to start your business.
It's not about the decision making around purchasing, and this is it's interesting this has come up because it's one of the stories I've been telling myself, because my business is new, it's less than a year old still, is that I can't afford this. And then you suddenly start to realise it's not about what you can afford, it's the value equation.
Can you afford not to?
Yes, can you afford not to? And the value that certain things bring to you.
I think there's an underlying principle that you've all just been saying, is that the problem we have is because we actually don't value our time enough.
Yeah.
We do not put a monetary value on our time, and a really early onset principle within your setting up your own business should be what your time is worth per hour. And I did an evaluation yesterday because my Apple Mac is, MacBook Pro is 8 years old and it is now incredibly slow. And I'm struggling to justify it's going to be like £2,000 to replace like for like. And I actually calculated a couple of times to see how long it took me to open the document and do something I needed to do. And then I kind of did a quick sum in my head about how many times that day I'd had that, how many times in a week, how many times in a month, how many times in a year. And actually, I can't afford not to do it, particularly with all the, because I've got accounts to do, I've got the menus to do, I've got to do the kitchen, and all of those things. So my time must be at work at least £25 an hour, at least £25, probably more, if I employ somebody to do all the things that I do.
So the story we're telling ourselves about things like we can't afford, actually there's always a way around it.
The all of the information we need is out there, but it's A, getting past, like seeing the story for a start and moving past that and going, okay, well that was a story, what's my next step? And then B, okay, like I could do all this. Like, it's like for me, it's like with my event, you know, I needed to get a landing page up. You know, part of my long working history has been as a virtual assistant, you know, so for most people would think, surely you know how to do that, like you're a VA. But it's like, no, actually, I've never had to do that one thing before. But for me, part of my story would be like it doesn't matter how many times, like the small whisper in my head was, why don't you just get someone to set up the landing page and just get it done? Like with my website, you know, why don't you just, like for me with my website, it's been this combination of, this guy's here ready to do all the stuff. All I need to do is give him some content and the colours. But it's like, but I have this whole story around creating the content, and what if I get it wrong, and what if I get the colours wrong, and it's like, you know, so my story is very much around a perfectionist streak of, unless what I create is perfect, I can't put anything out there. And so
that's huge.
And
that's really interesting,
because really such a block.
I've got a perfectionist streak. It's got to be right, it's got to be okay. But I'm, in my mind, that it's got to be right, it's got to be the right colours, it's got to look right, makes me subcontract. So I had to get a rollerband done recently. And, you know, they give you all the design specs on the website for the company that prints the banners. And in my head I was going, if I get this wrong, I'm living with a crappy banner forever. So I thought, I
can't order another one, ever.
No. First year of business, so budget is tight,
and
I do have to be mindful of that.
Yeah.
So I immediately said, right, in that case, I'm not taking that risk. And I've got a graphic designer to get it, and it's awesome.
There's a couple of things to that. Sometimes 80% of something is better than 100% of nothing. So rather than waiting for perfection, sometimes you just need to get it out there if it's time. And actually, that 20% that you may think is not right may be perfectly fine anyway.
So that's what I find interesting as well, is we can have the same flavour of story. But it's always going to show up in a different way. There's always going to be a little edge, like, you know, like the perfectionist thing. Kate and I are coming from totally different directions with the same kind of story.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that moves you to take action to get somebody else to do the bit that you're worried isn't going to be perfect. But for me, it's the opposite. That doesn't move me at all. It freezes me and keeps me very, very small and very, very kind of shut in with my perfectionist streak, because I judge myself first if something isn't perfect, and then I run the story of, well, if I know it's not perfect, everybody else knows it's not perfect, and everybody's looking at the imperfection, and you're not very professional, and I thought you knew what you were doing, and blah, 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 blah.
But that's a case for subcontracting, because then you can say, oh yeah, it's just the designer.
But then with other businesses and other different types of businesses, my new rule in my business is that if my staff can do something, I won't do it.
Yeah.
And because my type, somebody else can do it in my business, and we've talked about this already in the meeting, if someone else can do it, then that's not a good use of my time.
Mm-hmm.
To be doing that. And so my new rule, my new mantra is, if someone else can do it, I'm not doing it. And I'm doing even if I love doing it, because I need to do the things that nobody else in my business can do.
Mm.
Like write the book.
Which is mainly writing. Blogs, web copy, newsletters.
Yeah.
And nobody else can do that. Nobody else can do that. I believe in my business because I'm...
Oh, within the business.
Within the business.
Even that can be...
Even that, yeah. I mean, that can be, but I am a writer. So for me, that is part of my enjoyment of the business, is to express the business in written form.
And mine is to do my menus. That is the one thing that I have to do, is I need to create menus, because that is what I started the business for, was to be creative with the food. And that is the one thing that I have tried delegating and doesn't work.
Mm.
But going back to this thing about whether you kind of want to delegate if you enjoy doing it, it can be really frustrating, because I think a lot of us have a control freak tendency. If you go to your own business, you're likely to have that.
Yeah.
Thinking about other stories that people talk about. So as a first year of business, how often, for those of you who've been doing this for longer, do you start the month going, shit, I don't know where the work's coming from?
Every single month.
So it's not just me, because that's one that I have. I mean, it's so strange, because I start the month, you know, I've had a great month. So last month was a brilliant month, best month I've had so far in my fantastically long 11 months. It's going upwards. And then I'm thinking, I don't quite know where the work is coming from. And of course, by the end of the month, I'm going, shit, why does this work keep coming at me? I can't do it anymore. I was just curious about whether that's just about being new in business, or whether it's normal throughout your business management life.
I think it's pretty normal. Mm. You know, I think with my VA hat on, in that side of business, you know, clients that I've had who've been established in business for many, many years and very well known in their field, there's still months where it's like, I don't know where the money's coming in from now this month. You know, there's I think unless, for me anyway, this is the way I kind of look at it, unless your business model, you know, because even if you have something like Maria has, like with a restaurant, you know, it's still dependent on people coming through the door and putting bums on seats and paying. So I kind of think, unless you've got that pure online passive revenue membership kind of business, every business
every business is going to
have that kind of, where's it coming from this month?
Definitely peaks and troughs.
I was going to say, do you think that's just the path we walk of being self-employed? Is that we never fully know exactly where the money's coming from. We're not always going to have... We can't be sure what we're going to be earning this month, next year. And that's just the bit we have to breathe. through.
I mean, it comes. It's the price of the joy of running your own business.
Because
I worked in industry for 25 years. I always knew where the money was coming from because there was a paycheck. I mean, I was fortunate enough never to work for a company going bust when actually suddenly your paycheck just stops.
Yeah.
And that never happens to me, but I've seen that happen. But I always knew where the money was coming from. But I wasn't very fulfilled and I didn't really have any kind of an engagement and an ownership of what was going on. And it's quite interesting that when I was in consulting, being a part of the sales process was kind of unexpected in these big firms. And I never liked doing it, and I didn't enjoy it, and I hated it, and I was uncomfortable in it, and the story in my head was, I'm no good at this. Now, I love doing that. I love going out and meeting people for that first time and saying, okay, let's have a talk and see about how I can help you. I mean, I did it with Vendorka last week, but we sat down, and my entire perspective was, what can I do to help you? And that actually... it's the sales process. It's the early stages of the sales process. And I love doing it. And of course, then that leads to, when someone then says, actually, you can help me, and what's more, you can help me with something, A, you absolutely love doing with a passion, and B, I'm going to give you money for it. Yeah. There's that, wow, how awesome is this? And it's really, it's the biggest epiphany for me as I've gone through this, starting my own business.
That's definitely the most important question, because we always, as entrepreneurs and business owners, we always think about the bottom line, we always think about the money. But the most important question you have to create that relationship with all of your clients is, what can I do for you?
Yeah. How can I serve you?
Clients do say, and I as a client, as somebody who's going to buy something, a service, a product, I always want to know how much it's going to cost. But the first question is, how is it going to suit you? How is this person going to serve me? And I think that's one of the most important things, because then you can say straight away, okay, what exactly do you need? Okay, and this is my pricing structure. You can do that straight away. But if you don't do that and you have this kind of uneasy relationship with money all the time, and I think that's the uneasy relationship we can have with money as entrepreneurs as well, is how much actually am I worth? You know, are you worth the £8.50 admin, or are you worth the £30 person who's going to be the consultant?
It's been really interesting for me that I've actually just signed in the last couple of months a money coach as one of my clients. So her speciality is helping people with their relationship with money. And of course, with the work that I do, as you work with them, you start to actually really understand what they do.
And write their content.
That's it. But just the rewards of understanding all those different businesses, because it's fantastic what they used to be doing.
Yeah.
But the stories that people tell themselves around money, about not being worth it, and not their time not having value.
It's one of the biggest problems.
One of the key areas. Yeah. It's a huge area.
Well, £1 image on Canva. I mean, that was
pound. Yes, a pound is nothing.
A dollar.
Yeah, it's lovable, isn't it?
It's so lovable. But the shift to get to that point was massive. But then once I passed it, it was a, oh my God, I'm paying for images. I'm a professional. I'm actually doing this properly.
There's, I can't remember what book it is, but there was a really interesting book on entrepreneurship. And it basically said that if you do it just because you love it, it will never work. If you do it just because you want the money, it will never work. You have to have that combination of the passion about what you do and the desire to make it pay the bills.
And the value of yourself as well.
Yes.
You really need to value
yourself.
I think
that's where the making the money comes from.
That's part of it, isn't
it? It's actually, of course you should be making money because my time is worth something.
Mm.
And also as well, you have to bear in mind that, you know, moving a business forward, they say, you know, you can do that, and we tend to work in spurts as entrepreneurs. We tend to respond to a dip in sales, and then it all goes very nicely. And instead of making sure that we are continuing that process, we kind of wait for it to dip again and then go, whoa, well, let's go do something.
A bit more bust.
So it's more about pacing yourself and seeing what works. And actually, you have to remember that if you stand still in business, you're actually moving backwards.
Yeah, you're going backwards because everyone else is moving backwards.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to know if whether men run the same story as entrepreneurs in that kind of
bit like you were just saying, you know, we kind of go along, we see a dip and it's like, oh, push, get more sales in, and then we kind of go with the flow for a bit, and then we're very kind of up and down, which can be quite a women's way of doing stuff. We kind of, you know, we flow and then we do a spurt and then we flow. And men are a little bit more
action,
constantly. So just, I don't want to try and answer the question because clearly I'm not a man. But I think it would be really fascinating
not
to just
listener.
I used to be.
I did used to be.
When I was a man, I used to
be. Try and cast your mind back.
I'd be interested to know if there was a different dynamic. But the whole stories around money is in business is just a huge one. You know, those kind of glass ceilings we put on ourselves, and it's a bit like, oh God, can I really charge that much? But I think that's one of the things that's great about being an entrepreneur as well, is the fact that you do have those months where you're like, I don't know where the hell the money's coming from this month, and you worry. But then you also have the months where you can like earn way more than you'd ever have earned in a month, taking home a paycheck. And there's so much, like, to me, that kind of thing is a real story breaker. It's like, like I'm proving to myself, like, I've got the evidence. Like, here's the evidence. I've made this much in a month, so I can do it.
Yes.
And if I can do it once, I can
do it
again. More than once. You know, but sometimes until we have that little piece that just proves the story wrong, even just a fraction, it's like, you know, it's like taking the lid off, isn't it? It's like, oh, I can't quite hold on to that one as true anymore, because I have proved to myself that that's not the case.
But we could always say as well, you know, we've made that shed load of money in a month, that's it then. That's it, I've peaked.
You could
be telling yourself that story.
The other
it's just a one trick pony, I've done it, that's it.
Yeah.
The other having to consistently think, no, I can do it again.
Yeah.
The other thing that's really interesting around the money equation, if you like, is
how much you actually need compared to what you believe you need. And in terms of that, the story I was telling myself in the year before I did quit my job and start the business, there was that, I don't know how I'm getting, you know, I like having lots of money because you're quite well paid in the kind of work that I was doing. I like having money. I don't know how I'm going to be able to survive with no money. And all of this was going on in my head. And in fact, in that first month of living with no money, I didn't have no money, but you suddenly realise, actually, you don't need to impulse buy handbags and dresses and spend an absolute fortune on flowers for the garden, because, I mean, we're very fortunate where we are here in that we've got a market where it's actually quite inexpensive to buy, you know, to make your garden look lovely. And all of those kinds of, you find that you don't need anything like as much as you believe you're going to need to live. And therefore it doesn't matter as much that you haven't even matched the income that you were getting.
Going
back to the man thing, I don't necessarily think that the peak and trough ebb and flow is male or female orientated. I think you get that across both. I think men have, though, a more single-minded attitude to it. They tend to be more on one flow. They are less, it comes back to the hunter-gatherer, the fact that a man is focused in one direction. His peripheral vision on a biological level is less. They are more focused on where they're going, because they would have gone and they would have hunted that. And we get far more easily sidetracked. And I think that is probably the biggest difference between a male and female entrepreneur. He tends to be more single-minded. And I would say, that's not always the case, but I would say it is noticeable difference.
And men are fixers, aren't they? They like to. We've talked about this already as well. Yeah. It's men like to fix. So, yeah, I'm sure men they come from a completely different place with business, don't they?
Yeah,
well,
I don't know whether it's a female thing, but I'm definitely a bright, shiny thing. Oh, me too.
A new way of planning. A new way. I'm always doing
but
a new
I'm
way
always
of plan,
about
yeah. planning
but
my day.
Somebody suggests something. And
planning
I'm
my week.
Yeah, good idea.
I have a task
that's
list
the story.
yay long of things that someone has said, oh, do this, and I'm going to do them one day, but, you know.
Sunday.
What's the story in that?
Sorry. I've forgotten that. No. Sorry.
It's all right. Planning.
Planning.
Suggestions.
You said,
having things suggested to you, and that's the story that I tell myself. Having something suggested to you as if it's, you have to do it. Mm. And that's why my previous kind of non-profit thing actually did fail eventually. It was because everybody else's ideas were better than mine. So I was following everybody else's ideas and doing those and pleasing everybody, and actually it made the business just so rocky, because I was a bright shiny thing, and but also suggestions, well, people were suggesting things, and I thought that their opinion was better than my thoughts or my own opinions, and that's the story we tell ourselves as well, that somebody else is doing it better. So,
and it's your business, it should be you should be doing it your way, like following your bliss, your passion, what because that's what we bring to our business.
But did it feel frustrating, like you, like every time you listened to someone else and executed it and it perhaps didn't feel quite right, was there something, even if it was a whisper inside of you going,
No, I didn't listen to myself the whole 2 or 3 years I was doing it. I didn't listen to myself at all. I listened to everybody else and everybody else's ideas for the business. So I had lots of people come on board and then leave very quickly. And, you know, they wanted to put their brand on it and do everything they thought that they're good ideas. And I, yeah, great, let's do your ideas, I'll do them, and I'll get on with this, hello, where did you go?
Yeah.
You know, so...
And you're picking up the pieces.
I'm picking up the pieces, yeah, and that's why it didn't work.
So is the moral of the story then to have a clear idea where your business wants to go and have the courage of your convictions to stick with? And to be able to kind of take a diversion if there's a bit of a roadblock, but not slam the brakes on and stick it in reverse.
Yeah.
So you navigate round and you then get back on track. So if you think something is going to completely send you on a wild goose chase, and you, but it's believing it. So I will have stand-up arguments with my current manageress, and after it, we're best of buddies again, but we come up with some cracking things. But we're both very determined we're right. Mm. And we argue it out, and whoever believes they're right more will win. And then we go with it.
No, I was completely opposite. Everybody else was right. Mm. And that's not a good start for having a business.
No, you've got to believe in it yourself. Yeah. You've got to have an idea what you're about.
Yeah, goals and intentions are absolutely fantastic, but they have to come from you.
And personal confidence.
Yeah, and personal confidence.
I'm not convinced, but you necessarily have to be 100% convinced. Certainly, I mean, my experience of the last 11 months, has been that actually the business I thought I was starting has morphed and changed and moved and gone different ways. But I do think it's about ownership. If it is your business, you need to own every decision. Until that, I mean, as you grow and it starts to become an organisation, then you can't own everything because it just becomes unmanageable. But when you're starting out in that sole trader position, If everybody else is owning the shape of your business, then it isn't your business. Mm. So even if you don't know where it's going, there's that ownership piece. It's really, really key.
Yeah. What I found difficult at the beginning was I think that I was more looking outward. Oh, what is this shop doing, and how are they doing it, and how are they doing it, rather than looking inward and sort of looking. Actually, how do I want to do this? Because this is my business. How do I want to do it? I was sort of looking everywhere else and trying to be inspired by everybody else rather than sitting down and say, this is how I want to do it, because this is what works for me, for my family, for my creative life, and all this kind of thing.
Mm. That's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. And I completely agree with you there. And he's... That's really a pillar of my businesses, is I don't even know what other people do. Mm-hmm. I don't care what other people, how they run retreat centres or what their addiction programmes are like or what the content is. It's not my business to know that. Or people will sometimes say to me, oh, have you done market research before you do that? No, I have not. Absolutely not.
Unapologetically so.
Unapologetically so, because my business, my work is an expression of myself. Yeah. And therefore it is unique, and that is what makes it successful.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
I truly believe that.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. I think it is that. It is that uniqueness. Like, it's so easy to... It's so easy to create the story that everybody else knows better. Everybody else, you know, or you've been doing it for longer than me, so you must know, like, you've launched this, so clearly you know how to do that. And we make these assumptions looking from the outside in on everybody else's business, that they've got all of their shit together. They know exactly what they're doing, and they're not running the same insecure stories as we are, because they're just doing their thing. Where it's actually, what you said is beautiful, Vendulkar, because it's like, you know, when you create your business from the inside out, you bring absolutely the essence that's you. You know, there are a million and one places that you can go and buy fabric and take sewing classes and this, that, and the other. But there is not a million and one. There's not another business on this planet that has you in it.
Yep.
And while we're running the story, we're not enough, and we've got to do it the way they've done it because they're successful. We're hiding our light. We're hiding that special sauce that makes us amazing. And there are so many people out there that are just waiting for us to drop our stories that we're not doing it right and show up as who we truly are.
Yeah.
Because that will inspire them and that will light up something in them. And so it's like, in any business, no matter what it is, I truly believe, whether it's a big corporate or it's a tiny little independent, you know, what makes any business different, humanness in that business.
Yeah. Your authenticity.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And people being allowed to bring their best selves.
I do think quite a lot about the culture of comparison as well. And I do wonder whether social media, although can be a force for good for your business because you're transmitting, when you actually receive on social media, whether the culture of comparison really does make you stuck. Because
absolutely.
You can constantly see everybody else.
I mean, I spend hours looking at pictures of amazingly gorgeous 20-year-old women in their bikinis on the beach and thinking, I want that. Mm. I can have that body. And then you think, oh no, the reality is quite different. But the comparison is still there, to the point where it's like, I know this is like off topic, sorry, but it's not business, but it's still there in the sense of, like, you see what you want and you're kind of, part of you thinks, I can have that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part goes, and then it's almost like it's almost like, rather than being a motivator, it can, for me anyway, and I guess it depends what kind of personality you are, but for me, I find so many things demotivate and freeze me rather than pushing me in the other direction. So I'm a definite, when I compare, I don't compare and compete. I just compare.
I compare.
Yeah, just compare and despair. I like that, compare and despair. Yeah, that's exactly.
Mm. But you see those 20-year-olds in their bikinis as well, and they're making six-figure sums. You just think,
But is it true?
Exactly.
Is it true?
Yeah. There's something someone said to me that I think is really, really interesting about comparison, which is that when we compare, what we're doing is we're looking at somebody else's strength and comparing it.
That's very true.
She said this is someone I know from a group I'm in, and when she said it, my head just went, oh god, yes, of course, that's
very
what we
true
all do.
Mm.
It's what we all do.
I heard it expressed just this week, actually, very similar to that. It's that you're comparing behind the scenes, you're behind the scenes to someone else's
obvious
showreel,
and
you're not comparing for like.
I'm going to throw a total cat amongst the pigeons now, because I actually disagree with everybody else around the table
on
this. I know. I completely concur with the fact that you should not compare yourself to others. But I do think that if you are opening, starting, growing a business where you have competition within the locality, which is of a similar nature, and you're appealing to the same clientele, you should be aware of what your competition is doing. Mm. So, went on a really good course where we assessed our 10 closest kind of competitors and what the 10 of us, 11 of us offered, and what made us different. And then to concentrate on what made us different. So rather than it being comparisons or odious and it being a negative thing, it was turned into a positive thing. So we came out with that we were one of only a few places that did tapas. We were the only place that had ferret exhibits. We were the only independent with an outside eating area. We were the only place that offered like big sharing menus. We were the only place you could hire the whole venue out for weddings. So what I then did was I turned my marketing and everything about what I do to focus on what differentiates me from the other 167 eateries within Marys and Edmunds. Mm. And I think that's where it's important.
Yeah.
But not to go, oh, I'm rubbish because I'm not doing all you can eat and drink for $22.95.
That's healthy.
So that's where, comparison is healthy.
It's a good thing.
That's the good attitude to it, yes.
Yeah.
And this is it. When you look at businesses which are good at something, I think that a lot of the time is they found where they are different, what makes them different, and exactly embraced it, you know, and really, really sort of went really big on that to be unique. And I think that that's what that was the difference, you know. What I was doing at the beginning, I was thinking, what are they doing? What I should be doing. Yeah, that's how I was, that's how I was comparing, you know, what are they all doing and I should be doing as well. Whereas yeah, I needed to look at it from the other perspective.
What makes me special.
Exactly, what makes me special. And
when we were on Three in a Bed, the director said to us, just try to be as weird as possible, like as different as different as possible. They weren't telling us to do something that we weren't, but they were just, you know, sort of don't be scared of being interesting, or I can't remember what they actually said, but it was, we were encouraged to be as
quirky,
different,
quirky as possible. And we didn't have to try. we didn't have to try. But actually, by doing that and really truly being ourselves to the general public, we gained so much business and so much tract from doing that, from being fully ourselves.
Mm.
It was a really, really big lesson, because a lot of people said, oh, that's really bad for business, you don't want to do that, you don't want to go on that, you don't know how you're going to be portrayed. It could be the worst thing that you possibly do for your business. But actually, we went into it with the intention of being ourselves completely, and with no game playing, as some businesses do, being completely fully ourselves, and it was a really good business move ultimately. But it was, there were no holds barred. We were being as weird. I mean, I was foraging at one point in their garden trying to find some vegetables.
Through the bins.
Their veg patch, to have some greens for breakfast, because we eat vegetables for breakfast, and that's not normally supplied for breakfast. So I went foraging, and it was, you know, it was laughed at as it was being done, because they thought I was really weird, but actually I wasn't being weird, I was just being myself.
I love the fact that you went to bed fully dressed.
I know.
In that camping dress.
Oh, it was so cold.
Good night, husband. That was so brilliant.
But isn't that almost kind of like the, it's almost a bit like the kind of, sort of greatest story of all in business, isn't it? Where it's like there's almost this invisible rule book of, this is the way we do business.
Yes.
This is the way that business has always been done, and this is the way that business should continue to be done. And this is the way I've done it, so come and buy into what I do, and here's my six-figure blah, 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 or whatever it is. And it's
six,
like,
stages.
And it's like, who the fuck wrote the rule book?
Patriarchy.
But it is true, you know. Yes. And it's like,
If we would never, ever, ever have moved forward in time and in history and in the way we are and in technology and in all of those ways, if there hadn't been a few people that were willing to put their hand up and put their head up and go, actually, no, I think I'm just going to try it this way. Sorry. I'm just going to leave the rule book and I'm going to go and try it this way and I'm going to see if I can make that work. And then, like, lo and behold, things work because and then people start kind of moving in that direction, but we get so sheep-like in everything we do, but particularly with business because there's money involved and it feels so much more serious when there's money involved and it just isn't.
It's so encouraging to hear all of this about, you know, there isn't a rule book, because when I started the business, and I did just quit my job and make a start. Actually, I was doing some work before I quit the job. Mm. But for about 3 or 4 months, I felt massively insecure because I didn't have a business plan and I didn't have all of that, you know, the business strategy and the mission and the vision and the which actually from my time working in industry, all the big organisations of course have. Mm. And I felt really insecure. I only wrote a business plan when it was necessary to do it, because I needed a small business grant and you have to have a business plan to do it. And I realised as I wrote it that I didn't need a business plan, because you know what? It's my business.
Yes.
Who am I writing it down for?
Yes.
Seriously, I don't get my business plan out every month and read it through and say, how have I got on with this? Because I know what I'm doing and I know where I'm going and I know what I want. Yeah. But that whole mission, vision, strategy, my business has changed 4 times in 11 months because I've just realised where the real gap in the market is.
And it will continue to change. And I think
that's
a massive strength as well for any entrepreneur, is to be willing to be flexible and to, for the business to change, because the market changes and there are trends and there are all sorts of things that happen shift.
Or because you realise that what you wanted 8 months ago, it's not what you want anymore.
Or isn't what your customers want. So your customers will be a big pull on what you decide to do. It's sort of very arrogant to only try and sell what you want to sell rather than what your customers want to buy. Which is always like a bit of an awakening.
But you see, I disagree. Because I wouldn't ever sell something that I didn't...
I didn't say I wanted to do something I didn't want to do.
But I'm not led by my customers.
We wouldn't have been a tapas restaurant if we hadn't been led.
Yeah. And different businesses are going to work in a different way. But I'm led by from inside rather than outside.
Do you know what I always wanted to know? Do you know your last question on your podcast?
Oh,
which
yes.
Which you always ask people.
Yes.
Can you ask it
to
yourself,
ask
please?
Ask it now. So the question is, if you could speak to that younger you when you were just starting out in business, what would you, knowing what you know now, what would you tell that younger you? Just get on and do it, sir. Come on. Just do it, because... because you can always, I think it would be around believing in myself a lot more. You know, I'm somebody who has so many ideas. Like Esther, you know, you brought out those books earlier, those notebooks. I have the same. You know, shelves and shelves of notebooks of ideas, and the ideas is never the problem. I just wish I'd got on with it sooner, because
me too.
Do you?
I wish 20 years ago I'd got on with it.
Yeah. Because it never goes away. Like Katie talks about this, you know, this knocking.
It doesn't go away.
Doesn't go away, does it? This knocking of, you know, I've seen business plans I wrote in 2010. I had an idea to work on burnout. Why didn't I do it then?
Because you weren't ready. So why
didn't you? The story I told myself was I wasn't ready, but I was. Does that make sense?
We are ready a lot quicker than we think we are.
And we self-sabotage.
We're not prepared to put out that minimum viable product. I mean, you and me, I don't know whether you still listen to it, but the Own It podcast, they always say minimum viable product. And sometimes there's nothing wrong with that.
That's triggered a thought that one of the stories I have told myself since I took the decision that I'm going to do this, I'm going to set up my own business, I'm going to go follow my passion, I'm going to give this a go. One of the stories I told myself was, I will never regret doing this. And I was taking a huge risk because I'm single. I don't have any other source of income except the employment that I had. But always in my head, that story was, even if this is a crashing disaster, I will never regret giving it its best shot. Because if I stayed in employment, I was quite good at what I did. People respected me. I wasn't really fulfilling, but it paid a good wage and it paid the bill, all of that stuff. I would have got to the end of my life and regretted that I'd never given it a go. And someone recently said to me, my coach said to me, hell is reaching the end of your life with regret. Mm.
And I thought that was a poignant place to leave it. So I hope you enjoyed that. And if you're wondering who everyone is, I will put links to everyone in the show notes. So if you want to explore more about who they are and what they do, you can do. That was the last episode in this particular series. We're now going to take a short break and then return after the summer in September. So I hope you've enjoyed this first series, of which there have been 35 episodes in total. And I have some ideas around a few things I want to try on the next series. Still on the topic of navigating the inner journey of being self-employed, but I'm going to mix it up a little bit. So please do keep the ratings coming and reviews. And if you found value in any of these episodes so far, I would love it if you could head to iTunes and either give it a star rating or even better, write a couple of lines about why you like this podcast. Because I would love to spread the word to as many entrepreneurs out there as possible. I believe that the world needs more happy, healthy entrepreneurs out there doing good and making positive, meaningful and worthwhile contributions to society. So we can all feel a little bit happier and connected to one another as a human race. And that's the world I want to live in. And I think maybe you do too. Otherwise, you wouldn't listen to this podcast. So that's it from me until next series. And if you want to stay in touch until then, make sure you're on my newsletter list, which is happyhealthyentrepreneur.com/newsletter. Bye for now.